Good morning, good morning. It's amazing to be here in the it's amazing to be here in YU's new New Jersey location. And to be here with parents and sons biyachad. Baruch Hashem, to have an opportunity to learn together Avos Ubanim. And in particular to focus on a very foundational Mishnah from the end of our Masechta. That's highlighted and centerpieced in a very foundational sugya that we're up to the beginning of the Masechta. The Mishnah on Daf Pei Vav Amud Aleph, the last parak, talks about various scenarios where you have a get puzzle. We had a chance to begin to explore this in earlier shiurim. You have a gimel gittim sulam, three different situations where the get is puzzle. Then this is havlad kasher. This is on peivav amud aleph. If you don't have peivav amud aleph in front of you, you do have gimel amud beis in front of you, and the mishnah is quoted there. Shlosha gittim sulam, and this is havlad kasher. Three different situations where the get is puzzle, but clearly only a psul midrabanan, because in the most severe type of bidyevet situation. B'dievet, b'dievet, b'dievet. Not only the get was given despite its soul, and not only the fact that the woman accepted it and based on that went ahead and remarried, but she even had children ready with her second husband. So that's the most severe b'dievet situation. It's the most la'achar ha'masa. So, and this is havlad kasher. She went ahead and she got married. She had children. So we're not going to brand these, we're not going to deem these children to be mamzerim. The children are kasherim because, after all, the get is kasher min ha-Torah. So the Mishnah goes on to list three different situations of psulim derabanan. Kasev v'ksev yadayin alav edim, yesh alvein vein bozman, yesh bozman vein boi ala edechad. Either it only has one aid signed at the bottom, or it has no edim signed at the bottom, but instead the husband himself wrote it in his own handwriting. Or the edus is fine, it's signed by two edus the way you expect to get to be signed, but it's not dated. All those three cases are possible. In other words, the possible midrabanan indication, the indication is that the need for edim is drabanan, the need for zman is drabanan. And then we focus on the sefer. The Tana, Reb Elazar, says Alpha Pisha Enal of Edim Elshin is Sonul of Bifne Edim Kasher. You don't need Edim. You don't need Edim. Not only back against the wall, but the Evid, she went ahead and remarried and had children with the second husband. Up front, you gave a get, husband gives his wife a get with no Ede Chasima. It's an unsigned get. That get is Kasher. Belazar says, no, seems like no hesitations, no qualifications. The get is kasher without Eide Chasima signed on the bottom, presuming that there were Eide Mesira. If there were Eidim watching the act of Mesinas that get, there were Eidim watching the husband hand the get to his wife or the shliach of the husband, and as the case may be, hand it to the wife or to her shliach, so that's a valid get. That's a valid get. She'ena, and skipping half a line, she'ena edim chosim ala get ela mipnei tikun ha'olam. The edim sign on the get tikun ha'olam, the fact that you have edim chosim in the bottom of the get, that purely means midrabanan. This brings us back to the fourth and fifth brachim, a whole series of takkanos midrabanan mipnei tikun ha'olam. We focus on Kruzbal, but there are many of them. So the whole notion of edim chosim on the get, that's mipnei tikun ha'olam. As Rashi explains, it's not going to prove anything subsequently. What's going to happen if you can't, if there's a question as to whether the woman is divorced or not? So she'll pull out her get, but if the no edim chasima doesn't prove anything. So if you bring the edim asira, the edim who saw her receive her get, so that's valid. Bring the edim to beis din. But what if the edim are no longer around? As Rashi says, shem yamusu edim asira yavo abal v'ya'arer lomar lo gerashtia. And Eidim, if we're relying on Eidim Mesira, then her proof of divorce relies on the Eidim being alive and aware and accessible. So if any of those three variables change, so she's up the creek with no paddle. So that's why midrabanan, Chazal said, don't give a get without Eid Chasima. Never give a get that's not signed. If they get a sign, they can serve as a raya subsequently. But in terms of the kashrus of the gerushin, was the act of gerushin valid? Is she divorced? Blah says, absolutely, she's divorced without a signed get. You give a get that has no signatures on it whatsoever, but he hands it to just a document, just a letter that says, I hereby divorce you, identifying him, identifying her, all the details of the get. But the gist of it is, I, the husband, divorce you, the wife, and from this point in time, you're no longer married, you're free to marry whoever you wish. Unsigned, the husband gives that to his wife, b'chsav, Edim are watching, Edim Mesira are watching the Mesira, the get is valid. This, the safe of the mission in particular, as we began to explore in early Shiurim, we began to work on Gimel and Beis, is profoundly foundational, because this is where, this is the major source in all of Mishnayos for Rabbi Elazar's Shita, the Edei Mesira Karsi, that a get is valid without being signed. And what makes the krisis? Pasuk says that that handing over the bill of divorce, handing over the get, severs the bond, the marriage bond between husband and wife. What makes that happen? Edei Mesira Karsi. That's the position now going back to Gimel and Beis. That's where the Gemara spells that out. The Gemara here spells out that that Rebbe Lazar holds Edei Mesira Karsi, whereas Rebbe Meir says Edei Chasima Karsi. We had seen previously, Rebbe Meir thinks that the signature is when the Torah says V'chasal HaSeifer Kisses, the focus is less on the sofer writing the get and more on the Edim signing the get. And we explored that in earlier Shirim, what that means. Began to explore the Rav's explanation of this machlokas, that according to the Tanur of Meir, Edim Chasim Makarsi, the act of gerushin involves the husband giving his wife proof that she is divorced. The act of gerushin, according to Rebbe Meir, is that the husband gives his wife a shtar, raya, that she is divorced. It has to be signed. If it's unsigned, it's worthless, because according to Rebbe Meir, there's only one type of shtar, and it is a shtar raya. According to Rebbe Meir, kinyan shtar means handing over, giving the other party a shtar raya. If I give you proof that a certain change occurred, that makes the change occur. That's the position of Rav Meir. There is only one type of shtar, and it is a shtar raya. An unsigned shtar doesn't do anything. Kinyan shtar means giving you a raya that a certain change occurred, that a certain kinyan occurred. And so giving, handing, according to Rav Meir, a shtar raya does two things. Handing it over makes the kinyan occur, and holding on to it, produced later in Beis Din, can prove retroactively that it can verify that indeed the facts are as the shtar says. That's the position of Meir, that Edei Chasima Karsi. So the krisis is done by the Edei Chasima. If it's not signed, nothing happened. Whereas Rebbe Lazar, whom we just saw in Pei Vav Amud Aleph, Rebbe Lazar says, no. You need to have a signed shtar if you want to prove something later. But Rebbe Lazar says, going back to Sugis we discussed much earlier in the year, Rebbe Lazar says there are two different types of shtars. The shtar kinyan and the shtar raya. If you want to prove something, you want to come to the basin and verify what happened. In the world of Taurus HaSveikis, I want Edus. I want to prove what's happened previously. So either I'm going to bring in live Edim, or I'm going to bring a shtar signed by Edim. Obviously, to walk into basin with a piece of paper that's unsigned, instead of a typewritten document, a handwritten document that says that that I lent Alicia $1,000, but no one signed on the bottom, no Edim are signed on the bottom, Elisha isn't signed on the bottom. Obviously, the Beis Din is not going to accept that as proof that Elisha owes me money. It doesn't prove anything, it's just a piece of paper. Obviously, the Belazar agrees that a shtar, raya, to prove something, to prove a fact in Beis Din, requires a nechsima, as the Belazar himself just said in the Mishnah that we just saw. If you want, if a woman wants to prove subsequently that she has been divorced, she's going to need Eid Chasima. And therefore, in Tikkun HaOlam, Midrabanan, Chazal said, always make sure that they get a sign, that way it can always serve subsequently as a shtar raya. but that just make the kinyan for the get to create the new reality to divorce them, it doesn't. Rav Lazar says no, I can get divorced. The kinyan can work without eide chasima, eide mesira karsi. Just giving the shtar, an unsigned shtar, makes it work. Why does that make any sense? So he says the words, the Gemara gives the words, Eidei Mesira Karsi. So this is what we explored earlier on, that Rabbi Elazar says no. Permission to pay Vav Manav says no. There are two different things. Raya, you want to prove something, you need Eidus. But the Kinyan shtar, the Chiddush, in our parsha, Kiseitze, the parsha of Gerushin, and for Rabbi Elazar is not give a shtar raya and make it happen. It's just give the description of the event and make it happen. Giving an unsigned shtar works also. A shtar kinyan does not have to be a shtar raya. Two separate types of shtars. What is a shtar kinyan then? What is this act? That's where we left off the last time. Rabbi Elazar, Mishnah Pei Vav, Gemara Gimel and Beis, Rabbi Elazar is saying that kinyan shtar has nothing to do with proof. Kinyan shtar instead just means I need to express myself more vividly. Rambam opens Sefer Kinyan, Hilchas Mechira, Aleph Aleph. You can't make something happen just by wanting it to happen. Einan Mekach Nikna B'dvarim. Just telling you this ritva is yours. Say, Avram, here, this ritva is yours. Merely saying, thinking and saying, my Das Kinyan, I want this to be Avram, doesn't make it Avram's. Wanting this to be Max's doesn't make it Max's. That's how the Rambam opens the whole world of Kinyan. Hilchos Mechira Aleph Aleph. You need to have, it's not enough to have Daskin, to have made that decision. You need to have some sort of Maisa Kinyan. So if I actually hand it to him, he takes it, that might be a Kinyan Mashiach, a Kinyan Hava. We could do a Kinyan Sudar. We could do some other type of Kinyan. If I leave it in his house, there'll be a Kinyan Chatzar. But it's not enough to want it to be true. I have to do a Maisa. What's the Maisa of Kinyan Shtar? What's the Maisa of Kinyan Shtar? So Rabbi Elazar says, no. So again, Meir, we said, Meir is the Maisa of Kinyan Shtar is giving you proof. Rabbi Elazar would say, no. The Maisa of Kinyan Shtar is to have really said, Avram is Yizur, that's not good enough. But to express my decision in writing, that makes it more significant. It's not merely a, talk is cheap. To actually give it to you in writing, I sent you an email in our language, and that's a little more significant than just a text or a talk. So if I express my das in writing, Rabbi Elazar says that's already good enough. I wrote down this sada is sold to you, or a husband writes his wife, Hareya Muteres Chaladim, just to say it to her, that's merely das. But to give it to her in writing, I'm expressing my das in writing, that's more significant. Rabbi Elazar says, Eide Mesira Karsi. I gave it to you in writing, it's good enough. You want to prove it later, you'll need to have Eide, but those are two different modalities. Making it happen in the moment, proving later on that it did happen, those are two different things. Again, that's the Machlokas, Reb Meir and Reb Elazar. Is, according to Reb Meir, Eide Mesira Karsi, according to Meir, Eide Chasima Karsi, Kinyan Shtar, even Kinyan Shtar, means giving a raya, giving something which is signed. Reb Meir says, the only way to make it happen is to give you proof. Reb Elazar, whom we're going to focus on now, and whom, by the way, spoiler alert, Pashas we pass them like, Reb Elazar, who says, Eide Mesira Karsi, there are two different types of shtars. Shtar Kinyan, Shtar Raya, they're not the same at all. You want to prove something, you need Eidim. You want to just make it happen, I just have to give you my Das Bechsav. Say Amiras HaDas is not good enough, but Das Bechsav, that is good. So with that, we now come to the missing one. There you go. We left out one line for the Mishnah. Whether you're a follower of Pevavim and Aleph or Gimel and Beis, we left out one line. And that's what I want to focus on now. Let's go back to Rabbi Elazar. Elazar says, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Aval Pishain Al Eidim, Al Shinna Sanalab, if Naedim Kasher. Once again, Elazar holds Eide, Nasir, Karsi. The Kenyan is valid without the Ishtar being signed. Totally comfortable with that. Even the Tanakhama sounds like Alpi Pashas. He holds like Reb Elazar in the Torah. Okay. Reb Elazar is very clear. There's really no need for the signatures except to get his kosher. Midrabanim, you're in violation of a Takana Drabanim because you should protect the wife The wife needs to be chazal protecting the wife, make sure she has a son get, but fundamentally the kinyan is kosher. And then he adds one more line, three words which we left out. The govem in a chasim mishubadim. The get is kosher, and you can collect from property that has a lien on it. What does that mean? And what does that have to do with Rebbe Elazar? What even are nechasim mishubadim? So this morning's seder was a little bit brief. We'll be mashal and ritz Hashem going forward. But let's give a little bit of background. Our story begins with the Mishnah in Bava Basra that you have in front of you. A very, very central Mishnah in Bava Basra. The very bottom of Kuf Ayin Hey Amud Aleph. Zeir Shava Purim Purim, Zeir Shava Gittin Bava Basra. Last year, some of the Purim Torah signs around Yeshiva pointed out that Maseches Gittin, Maseches Nezikin seem to have swapped, because the Perek HaNizakin, the fifth Perek in Gittin, sounds like it belongs in Bava Kama, and the last Perek of Bava Basra is Perek Get Pasha, which sounds like it belongs in Gittin. So Perek Get Pasha is all about Shtaros. And here at the towards the very end of the perek, the sechta goes to Kuf Ayin Vav. So here we are on the bottom of Kuf Ayin Hamin Al. Amal v'schavero b'shtar govim v'nechasim v'shubadim. Ali v'edim govim v'nechasim v'nechorim. Mishnah says that if I lent you money, going back before, I may or may not have lent Elisha $1,000. If indeed I lent Elisha $1,000, I'm entitled to repayment. That's what the Chumash says. I have the right to repay it. I lend him money, he has to pay me back. If he's willing to pay back on his own, no. If he's not willing to pay back on his own, so I may have to schlep him to Beis Din. And Beis Din will say, okay, no. Elisha says he never borrowed the money, or he paid me back already, and I say no. I made a loan, it's not yet satisfied, you still owe me the money, the loan is outstanding. So Beis Din is going to adjudicate the case. How am I going to prove to Beis Din that indeed Elisha owes him money? Well, let's take a simple case. I say I lent $1,000 to Elisha, and he says, no, we discussed it, we negotiated, but the deal fell through, I never borrowed money from you. So I say he owes me, and he says, oh, love you, so I never borrowed the money. What can I use to prove in Beis Din that indeed I lent Elisha money? Either Star or Eden, right? Why does it matter? Why does it matter that I bring Shtar or Edom? Huh? So either way, I need proof. Right? Is there a difference between bringing Shtar and bringing Edom? Shtar is more powerful. And this we discussed at the very beginning of the year. Ironically, Shtar is more powerful in a couple of ways. Good. Well, on the one hand, right, I can push back on the Shtar. I can push back on the Shtar. We're going to have, if Edom will come in, so we see live Edom in front of us. If I bring in a Shtar, there's no live Edom, so at least me draw on. Elisha has the right to say, you know, Cohen, you forged the star, no one ever signed it, and he's got that we discussed earlier, I'm going to need to do a key in my star. Mishnah is exhibits. Good. But assuming the star is verified, so star is stronger than Edom in a couple of ways. One way is star not only proves that I lent him the money, but my continued possession of the star proves that he never paid me back. Okay. There's something else, though, that this Mishnah here in Bava Basra points out. Shtar is more powerful than live Edom, ironically, in a different way also, which is if I bring Eitan and Eitan, or I bring Cohen and Cohen, neither are more related to me nor to each other, and therefore they're not Krovim. So I bring live Edom into Beis Din, so then okay, now Beis Din knows that indeed these live Edom witnessed, you know, a year ago, they remember that a year ago I lent $1,000 to Elisha and we had agreed that he would pay back in 9 months. Okay, so now we know the Havah took place. He had claimed previously Havah did not take place. Beis Din says, Elisha, you owe him the money. Okay. The Gov in the Mishnah says, Minachasim b'nei chorin. I can collect from free assets. For that's it. Whereas if I bring a shtar signed by Natan and Natan, or signed by Zevi and Zev, then I can even be gova Nechasim Meshubadim. What are Nechasim Meshubadim? So Nechasim Meshubadim means the following. If you want the background, I think that often the clearest background you'll find is in Rambam. The Rambam that translates, organizes everything and translates it into Hebrew and lays it out in an incredibly methodical fashion. You'll take a look, if you didn't take a look this morning, we're going to say it was a little bit short, you'll take a look in Mirtz Hashem later today or tomorrow morning. The Rambam lays out at the beginning of Malva Velova, Perek Yud Ches, he explains what this means. Nechasim Meshubadim is like this. Let's say you come to Elisha, now that we determined that Elisha always needs money, so I come to Elisha basically and says, look, Elisha, you owe $1,000. Pay up. So Elisha is going to comply with the basis and says, sure, I'm glad to pay, but give me some time to get money together. So the Rambam describes the beginning of Perek Yud Ches, he describes it further in more detail, sort of this, the play-by-play in Perek Chav Beis. So he'll say, look, okay, give me some time to get cash together. I need to liquidate some assets. Okay. So he starts selling property, he starts selling assets. And then he'll come back in a couple of weeks, whatever time Bazin said. So, okay, here's a check for $1,000. Let's say he comes back and says, I'm really sorry, I don't have $1,000. Or let's say it's $1,000,000. It's $1,000,000 loan. He was trying to launch a business. I come back a year later. He says, I really feel bad. I would love to pay you. I don't have $1,000,000. I invested $1,000,000. I tried to start a business. The business went south. My inventory, everything I have, is only worth $750. It's worth $750,000. I don't have $1,000,000. I'm glad to. I'll liquidate all the assets. I'll sell whatever I have. I'll turn it into cash. And here's $750,000. I'm really sorry. I can't pay you the full $1,000,000. So what happens? He's a good guy. He wants to pay back. Or he's not a good guy. At least the real Elisha is sitting right here. He's a great guy. But whatever the case may be, whether the Lova wants to be helpful and he's cooperative or he's uncooperative, either way, he doesn't. If he's cooperative, he'll be upfront about what he has. If he's uncooperative, the Beis is going to have to, in a more adversarial way, try to discover all of his assets. But by hook or by crook, we discover that the Lova, Elisha, doesn't have $1,000,000. Even if he's a good fellow and he wants to pay back, he doesn't have it. What can I do? So now what? So what's my plan B? Do I have a plan B? So this is where Nechasim Meshubadim come into play. Nechasim Meshubadim means we'll say, well, Elisha so far was looking at his free assets, the assets that he owns now. In the year 2023, when I come to collect the loan, we were looking at his bank account and his investments, and whatever assets he has, whatever inventory he has in his warehouse, and his second car, and whatever it is. He has some artwork in the house, he has some extra furniture. So if we sell all of that, that's all going to yield $750,000. Nechasim b'nei chorin, free assets, meaning assets that he owns now. If that's enough, we're good. As the Gemara says on Daf Kuf Ayin, Hey, I'm in. As the Gemara says, Kuf Ayin, Kuf Ayin Dalet, I'm sorry, if you had that Bava Basra in front of the previous block, the Gemara says, if he has enough Nechasim B'nei Chorin, you go with that. That's it. If he has enough free assets to cover the $1,000,000 loan, you only take the assets that he owns right now. Nechasim b'nei chorin. If he doesn't have enough nechasim b'nei chorin, he wishes he could pay, but he can't. He really wishes the business had taken off. Unfortunately, it didn't. He doesn't have the cash. So then, step plan B might be nechasim meshubadim. Nechasim meshubadim means the following. A year ago, 10 years ago, whenever the loan was made, why did I lend Elisha money? Because I thought he could pay me back. Number one, I probably thought that his business model made sense. And he explained what he wants to launch. I said, okay, good. I said, I'll give you $1,000,000. I'm sure you'll make plenty. You'll have enough cash to pay me back. Divos there. And he also, he had a house. And he had an apartment there to sell. And I said, look, if you don't have cash on hand, if need be, basically we'll give you your house. I'll make you sell the house, and I'll take $1,000,000 worth of your real estate. Now, 10 years later, 1 year later, whatever it is, now 2023, I'm being gove, I'm seeking repayment, and he came to Elisha, and all the inventory, this and that, he's already been selling stuff. So I said, where's your house? Where's that house? He said, I hate to tell you, I had to sell the house and move into a rental because my downside, I sold the house to get cash to put into the business. He no longer owns the house. If he still owned the house right now, that would be nechasim b'nechor, the assets he owns right now, and Beis Din would have given it to me. He no longer owns the house. He went ahead and sold the house to Tzvi. Tzvi now owns the house that Elisha used to own. Tzvi now owns the house, which are nechasim mishubadim. Because Elisha owned that house when he borrowed the money, the moment I lent him money, two things happened. And this, the Ran lays out very beautifully in Ksubis. You have it tomorrow in the Beis HaMedrash. We'll have a fuller set of the song. You'll take a look in the back of the Gemara Ksubis. For now, it's on the back of the Maamar Makomos. The Ran has this language deep into Maseches Ksubis. Gevias Chovos, the part of Halacha we're in right now, of how a repayment of debt, which is very, very lemaisa, shows up in many, many Nashim Azikim Masechtos. In Bava Kama, in Bava Tzia, in Bava Basra, in Gittin, here we are, in Yavamas, a little bit, and certainly in Ksubas. Deep in Ksubas, this is a major topic. So the Ran says, right over here, he's Korin Abeinu Tam, Shnei Shibudim Yeshto Lemalva Al Halova. The Malva lender has two types, has two holds on the Lova, the borrower. His two obligations are created when I lend Elisha money. Number one is Shibud Aguf. Shibud Gufo Shalova. Literally means his body is obligated to money. His body, this is not Chas V'Shalom merchant of Venice, not that he's taken a pound of flesh, it means it's his person. He is personally, doesn't mean literally his body, it means his person. There's a personal obligation. He owes me money. Shahu mechoyiv lefroa. If Elisha borrowed money, he's obligated to pay me back. V'hu ikir ha-shibud. And that's the center shibud, the center obligation. I lent him money. He owes me money. Shibud aguf. The lova himself is personally obligated. And then there's a second shibud. Shibud al nechasav. When I lend him money, not only is Elisha now obligated to me, but his nechasav, his assets, specifically his karka, his real estate, not his car, and not his sukkah, and not his motorboat, and not his artwork, and not his furniture, not his bike, not the metalplin, but his karka, his real estate, the land, and the garden, and the house, and the factory, and the mall, all the real estate that he owns at the time that I lent him money, become a shubah to me also. So he owes me the money, and his house owes me the money. His house owes me the money. Shiva nechasim, his nechasim are obligated to me. Kedarina, here we go. That's that block before where we're at. Nechsoi the bar inish inun arvinle. The Gemara has a very rich phrase. The Gemara says that when I lend Elisha money, his house and his apartment and his factory and his mall, all of his karka are like a cosigner, or a guarantor. They're an ariv. But if you have a live ariv, let's say I want to borrow money from Zevi. So Zevi says, Cohen, I'm not so comfortable lending you money. He says, I'm lending you $50,000. Who says you can be able to pay it back? So how do I convince Zevi that I'm a safe risk? There are different ways to do it, but one of the ways that is discussed, again, in many Masechtos, but particularly in Parakeet Pasha, the last Parakeet of Vasra, is I say, look, if I don't pay back, So Gabriel had my back. Gabriel's going to co-sign. So I'm borrowing $10,000, say $50,000 from Zevi, and in 6 months from now, I have to pay back. If Zevi comes to me and I can't pay, he has the right to come to Gabriel. Gabriel's going to sign also, make a kinyan. Gabriel is, Zevi is the malva, I'm the lova, Gabriel is the arid. Remember Yehuda? Yehuda, then Yaakov, said to his father, I'm taking responsibility. We all have a responsibility for one another. So Gavriel is an Arid, he takes responsibility for me. If I can't pay, he'll pay. Okay? That's the concept of an Arid. Gavriel must be a really good friend, he's willing to do that for me. It's usually not the wisest idea to co-sign for other people, unless you're really, really sure that that you can trust them. Okay? Gavriel's a really great guy, and he's what, or he really trusts me, and he says, sure, no problem. Gabriel's convinced my business plan is, my business model is amazing. For sure I'll be able to pay back to $50,000. And he just said, Zevi's nervous, so Gabriel says, I co-sign. That's an Arid. He's the plan B. So the Gemara says in Bava Basra, when I lend money to Elisha, or when Zevi lends money to me, if the Lova has karka, let's talk about me and Elisha now, but I bet Elisha had karka. I had no karka when I borrowed from Zevi. So I needed a human Arid. I needed Gabriel to back me up. But if I'm lending money to Elisha and he has a house, and he has an apartment that he owns, and he has a factory that he owns, and he has a farmland in Nebraska that he owns, so then his karka is his arid. If he can't pay me back, his karka will pay me back. Well, I mean, his karka will pay me back. His karka is his. No. I mean, if I come, when you need an arid, if Elisha can't pay me back, I come back in a year, and I say, Elisha owe me the money. He's like, I'm so sorry. I know I owe you $1 million. I don't have $1 million. So what about the house? So what about the artwork? Sell the artwork. It's only worth $5,000. What about the extra furniture? I'll sell that too. All everything, all the inventory in the warehouse, it all adds up to $750,000. At least I'm so sorry. I'm short $250,000. I wish I could pay it. On so many levels, I wish I could pay it. I can't. They say, well, what about the house? What about the farmlands? They sold it all to Tzvi. So you know what I do next? Bezdin will tell me, go knock on Tzvi's door. See, the house is mine. See, the farmland is mine. I'm entitled to $250,000 of that land as payment for my loan. That's the idea of Shibud Nechasa. There's a lien, L-I-E-N. There's a lien on the property. But when I, because again, it's property, it's karka that Elisha owned when I lent him the money. If he owned the property when I lent him the money, his property became an RA. The property is now backing him up. Not only does he have a personal obligation to me, his property does. So even if he subsequently sells his property to Tzvi, it's that property is already obligated to me. When Tzvi bought that land, he was buying a land that already had a shibud. There was an asterisk on that land. He bought the land, but he knew, but if Elisha defaults on his loan, I'm going to lose the farmland. Presumably Tzvi negotiated with Elisha, and when Elisha sold him the land, he said, well, there's a shibud on it, you got to give me a discount. So this land is worth $500,000, but I'm willing to pay you $300,000 because there's a risk. Right? They negotiate. So, but Tzvi bought it, knowing, hopefully, nowadays whenever you buy property, you do a title search. The title search largely means you're hiring a firm to find out, does anyone, any previous owners of this land, this house, do they have an outstanding debt to the bank or to any other lender? Let's find out. Is it clean title with no shibud, or it's a complicated title? Yeah, Elisha owns the land, but there's a shibud to come. So that's shibud nechasim. So, and the Mishnah says, so now we come back, so now we learned, so let's back up a little bit. What have we learned? Gevias chovos. You lend money, you got to pay back. And as the Ran formulated, there are two things happening in terms of have to pay back. When I lend Elisha money, so number one, that obligates him personally to pay me. He owes me money, which means if he's not going to pull the cash out of his wallet, Bezin's going to take anything that he owns, or almost anything. Misadrin al-Balchov, the Gemara says, Erechim, we don't leave him penniless, we leave him with basics. He has to have the basics and what he needs not only to live, but also to continue to work and earn money. So we'll leave him with basics, but whatever he has beyond the basics, the Bezin will take away for a payment of the loan. That's all shibud ha guf. And then, if that's not enough, we'll go to his land that he used to own but no longer owns. It's not shibud ha guf, it's still shibud nechasim. That karka is also obligated to me. When is it always true that I have a plan B? It is always true that if the borrower himself doesn't have the full $1 million, I can go after the land that he already sold away to Tzvi. Is it always true or not always true? What did the Mishnah say about Rav Asra? Not always true, right? Depends.
Only if you start.
Right, only if you have a star. Right, so if it's just a question of I lent Elisha $1 million and Eitan were watching, so Eitan and Eitan, whichever Eitans we're talking about here, we'll leave it open. The Eitan and Eitan will come to Bezer, they'll be made. They asked me, so come and lend Elisha $1 million. Remember they said, here the due date, yeah, it's already due. We remember everything. And Elisha claimed that he didn't, or he admits that he owes the money. He admits he owes the money. He's a good guy. He admits he owes the money. We have Aiden. Yeah, we have a need to Aiden. He admits he owes the money. But he says, but I don't have. The only Aiden, there is no Shibin Nechazim. The only Shibin Nechazim, he gives what he has, and the rest I have to eat the loss. Or I'll wait for him to make more money. He'll eventually pay him back. But if there's a star, signed by Zevi and Zev, so then I have the right not only to collect from him, to go after the Meshubadim also, go after Lekuchos. Tzvi is Lekuchos, he's the one who's Lokeach, who bought the land from Elisha. The buyer is going to have to relinquish the land to me also. Oh, that's Nechasim Meshubad, that's the concept of Shiva Nechasim, and that's what, coming back to Maseches Gittin, because it all comes back to Maseches Gittin, not Gil and Beis, Rav Lazaret said, Govim in the Chasim Meshubadim. Now, at least we understand the words. Rav Lazaret says, if a star without Edom, star without Edom, you could still be, the get is kosher, and you could collect, when you collect, the money that's due, you can even go after Meshubadim. Even though the shtar isn't signed, it still counts as a shtar. You need a shtar in order to collect from the Chasim Meshubadim. Even if it's not a signed shtar, you collect from the Chasim Meshubadim. Okay. And then you had a chance to look at Rashi and Gimel Beis. In a very brief morning theater. So I'm going to get a chance. Let me ask you a question. Even better. Because I actually want to know, what's your muskel rishon? What would you have assumed? What would you have assumed? That's often an important tool in Derech HaLimud, in appreciating Machlokas, two ways of reading the Gemara. You have to ask yourself, Rishon had two ways of reading the Gemara, what would you have guessed? What seems like the more obvious way? And then you have to ask yourself, why would the other Rishon, what prompted him to say the more difficult way? Looking at the Mishnah, Gimel Beis or Pei Vav Manav. Go to Menachat, again, Rabbi Lazar says, again, he says the husband gave the wife a get. It wasn't a signed get, but the Edom and Sira were watching. Kasha, she is divorced. They go them in a chasim mishubadim, and he collects from, or she collects gova. He or she collects from. Nechasim Meshubadim. Who's collecting what Meshubadim with which star on what obligation? So now we know what Meshubadim means. Meshubadim means that if whoever owes the money doesn't have their own assets, doesn't have B'nei Chorin, so then we're going to go after the Lekuchos, the Tzvis, who had bought real estate from whoever owes the money, they'll collect the money from the Meshubadim. But what on earth? And then he goes back to talk about the get. She'ene, or maybe not. Because after all, the holy for Chasim is just my Tikna Olam. Who's collecting what from whom? Using which star?
Suba maybe?
Ah, so it could be Tiksuba. After all, every time there's a get, the get does two things. The get does many things. Then we discussed in the past, it's important to be sensitive. Obviously, get is doing a lot of is making major emotional impact in what's already a fraught situation. Every situation is unique and different, and a get is emotionally powerful in a whole lot of ways. Sometimes it's improving a situation for both the long term, sometimes not, invariably painful, unless the rare case, as we discussed, a get shchimera, the get of love to avoid the igun to a yavam. Aside from the emotional impact, halachically, a get most obviously renders the woman penuyah, she's no longer an ishish. And it has, in addition to Evan HaEzer, there's no longer Isser Niyuf, and it's no longer a marriage with all the positives and negatives that that was carrying with it. There's also a Choshe Mishpat aspect, there's a Dini Mamonis aspect. Because a husband, when a man marries a woman, he assumes a financial many financial obligations. Most of them are in real time. He's got to love, cherish, and financially support his wife for the course of the marriage, sharing ksus. But also, he takes on an additional financial obligation of the ksuba, which is that in the event that the marriage ends, either due to his predecease, either he passes away and she's still alive, or they get divorced, so then he owes her a lump sum alimony, a large amount of money called the ksuba. So if there's a get, not only does the get end the marriage, the get also activates the chiyav ksuba. The chiyav ksuba is if and when he dies first, or if and when he divorces her, then he or his estate owe her 200 zuz plus whatever else is riding on the ksuba. Oh, okay, so one possibility is, husband gives the wife a get, even though the get had no eide chsima, it's a valid get, there are eide mesira watching, so A, she's no longer married, and B, she can collect the ksuba, and she can even collect the ksuba from the chasim meshubad. What does Rashi say? Here, take a look, Gimel and Beis. Go b'ksubasa beget zeh min chasim meshubadim. Right? The Mishnah says in Ksuba she doesn't need to bring the Ksuba from the wedding in order to collect the money. She just brings the get to Beis, we assume that the marriage carries with it a chi of Ksuba, with or without the shtar. She brings the get to prove that she is divorced, so now she can be go over the Ksuba. So the Mishnah is saying, according to first Pshat and Rashi, you bring you were talking about specifically Gova with the Kamatz. She collects the Chasim Meshubadim from her. If her husband doesn't have enough money, free assets, Nechasim B'Necharim, to cover the amount of the Ksuba, so she'll go after all the people to whom her husband sold land over the course of their marriage. All that land is Meshubad to her Ksuba. That's option one. What else could it mean? Given all the conversation we had over the last, all the examples we've given over the last little while, what else could go from the Chasim Meshubadim? Stop. 99% of the time we're talking about the Chasim Meshubadim, we're not talking specific about Ksuba. We're talking about Cohen lends Alicia $10,000 and $500,000, whatever it is, and you have a Shtar Chov. Go back again. Mishnah Kufayin Hayim and Aleph and Baba Basra. You need a Shtar Chov in order to have Meshubadim. If it's not a Shtar Chov, if you don't have a Shtar to Milva Peh, there's no Sheep in the Chasim. What counts as a Shtar? As a Shtar Chov? So Rabbi Elazar says, that's shot number two in Rashi. Lishna Achrina. Gova Menachasim Mishubadim Im Shtar Milvahu. Talking about our general Shtar Milvah alone. Gova Menachasim Mishubadim. So Rabbi Elazar, according to the second shot in Rashi, Rabbi Elazar is saying that any shtar, when the Mishnah Bava Basra says you need a shtar chov in order to be going from the Chasim Meshubadim, what counts as a shtar chov? So Bava says a shtar is valid without Eidich Zimu. That's what she does. Rabbi Elazar, Eidim Mesira Karsi. Eidim Mesira Karsi. So that's two Lashonos in Rashi. Rashi says, you're going to wonder, but the very next line you use the word get. Eina Eidim Chosma La Get. So Rashi says, don't worry. We find elsewhere the word get often means specifically a shtar gerushin, but often is also used just to mean shtar in general. Get means a shtar. Stam get is a shtar gerushin, but get can also be used to mean any type of shtar. It's not surprising we use the word get where the Messiah is getting, but Rabbi Elazar is really saying, again, as we said before, Elazar is saying, making a foundational comment here. But also teaching us the concept of Eidim Mesira Karsi is Shita is rooted here. So he's giving two major examples. Number one, Eidim Mesira Karsi for a get. Number two, Eidim Mesira Karsi for a Shtar Chov. The question is, one second. So which one would we have sued? What's the Muskel Rishon? on one hand, tshuva, because we are in a world of getting. On the other hand, popping out, don't mechassim b'shabbat, generally sounds like we're talking in general. So, of the two shitos, which one is more limited? Or let's put it this way. Which shita includes which? The first pirush in Rashi is talking about ksuba. The second pirush in Rashi is talking about sharchol. Which pirush includes which one? The other one? The second one includes the first one. Right? The second one is saying any shtar. The first shita is saying dafka, presumably, dafka get, as opposed to sharchol. That's what it sounds like. The machlokas is sharchol included? Or is Shtar Chov not included? In other words, what we really have on our hands seems to be a machlokas, not just in Pirush, it is a machlokas how you interpret Parshanot of the Mishnah, how you interpret the Mishnah. It's also, as Tosis goes on to say, it's a machlokas in Girsos. They say, if you dig in, maybe we'll take a look tomorrow. If you dig into the Gemara in Bava Basra, Kufayin Hamid Beis, if you read the Gemara there, so it sounds because the Gemara there, Kofayin Hay, quotes our Mishnah Gittin Pei Vav, and there's a question of Girsa, does it say Ksuba or Ksiva? Mishas Ksuba or Mishas Ksiva? So that may be a Girsa question. But it's not a Machlokas in how you mefarish the language of the Mishnah and a question of what the Girsa of the Gemara is, it's a question in Din. If I, going back to where we began, so I lent money to Elisha, and I gave, and he gave me a shtar chov, but it wasn't signed. The eidim were watching. Now that's how am I proving that I lent the money? Because they're eidim. But there was no, he gave me a shtar chov. Normally, the lova gives them a shtar chov, and it's signed by the witnesses. It wasn't signed. So we have machlokas two lashonos in Rashi. Does that create a sheep with a chasim or not? That's really what's going on here. It's not just a question of what the language of the Gemara means, language of the Mishnah. It's a question of when the Mishnah in Bava Basra says milvav b'shtar sheiv nechasim, does that shtar have to be signed or not? What would you have guessed?
Yes.
Yes. Why? Some of you say no. Those who say yes, why?
Oh, right.
Look, shtar chov. What's a shtar chov? It was not proven anything.
Rabbi Elazar
doesn't hold it. So what, remind me what your name is? Elon. So Elon says Rabbi Elazar holds that the star doesn't need Aiden. But here we come back to where it began. And we're going to wrap up with this concept. And we'll continue the Sugya tomorrow. Elon says, well, Rabbi Elazar holds you don't need Aiden Chesima. On the other hand, as we began, even Rabbi Elazar agrees that to prove something, it has to be custom. If I walk in, again, as Rav himself says in the Mishnah, if a woman comes to Beis Din and says, I want to remarry, and they say, well, you were married previously. She says, yes, but I got divorced. And they say, well, prove it. She pulls out a get, and the get isn't signed. We're going to say, we're really sorry. That's not a valid proof. It may have been a valid get at the time. It was a valid shtar kinyan, but even if laws are agreed, the shtar raya obviously has to be signed. A shtar without signature doesn't prove anything. So a shtar chov, whoever heard, a shtar chov is not signed. So, to prove that he owes me the money, I have to bring the Eidim Mesira. But it's still a shtar chov that wasn't signed. What it sounds like is, yeah.
It sounds like the first chat. But in the second chat, there's an Eidim.
Right. So right now it sounds like, from the first Ran Rosh, we understand why he said we must only be talking about the get. We're not talking about shtar chov. Whoever heard of a shtar chov is not signed.
Again, in the first case, the reason why it would make sense is because you have a tsuba, which is a shtar that has signatures.
Right.
So you're linking back to something that has...
Good. You're right. So the first case, you understand how it works because the get created the get is a shtar kinyan, according to Blasi, not signatures to create the gerushin, and the gerushin on the fact of gerushin alone already activates the chiyuv tsuba. Whereas if you say to our general chov, Shtar Chov, it's unsigned. How are you talking? But yet, that's the second sheet in Rashi. Tosa seems very warm to the idea. And it gets us thinking, and I'll leave you with this to ponder to tomorrow. It sounds as though, strange though it may be, it's what Shechter quotes in Eretz Tzvi, the Kunstar Shtars from the Rav, it sounds as though the second, now that we've begin to put the piece together, the second day I must hold that a Shtar Chov, as Elon pointed out, Belazer and Meir agree that a Shtar Raya has to be sung. The whole Machlokas, Meir and Reb Elazar, the way the Rav sets it up very sharply, is only about Shtar Kinyan. So the second day in Rashi must hold that a Shtar Chov is a Shtar Kinyan. Shtar Chov is a Shtar Kinyan. Who ever heard of that? Shtar Chov is a Shtar Raya. He owes me the money because I let him. The Shtar Chov is just proof. So we're left with, for now, with this. Once you dig, once you don't ignore the Rashi, you read carefully and plug it back in, it sounds like a machlokas two days, and what appears to be a machlokas, the gersos, but the gersos are driving a lundish of machlokas, there's shtar chov, there's shtar kinyan, there's shtar raya. Which, at first, we can say the word, what does that mean? Of course, there's shtar chov, there's a shtar raya. That's the ultimate shtar raya. So we're going to have to explore tomorrow, what we haven't yet explored is what is this sheep in the chasm? I said, you know, I'm going after Tzvi, I'm taking away his house. Why does that make any sense? But Tzvi owns the house. I understand, but Elisha owns the house, he owes the money, I take it back. But Tzvi owns the house, it's very nice that Elisha used to own it, who cares? And let's say Elisha had a friend, and Elisha told his friend, you know, you're always invited to come over to my house whenever you want to. And then Elisha sells the house to Tzvi. So, do Elisha's friends all have the right to crash Tzvi's refrigerator? Because it used to be Elisha's refrigerator? No, obviously not. No longer Elisha's refrigerator. It's no longer Elisha's house. Now it's Tzvi's house. Now Tzvi's friends get to crash, not Elisha's friends. So it's very nice that I'm Elisha's creditor, but I'm not Tzvi's creditor. Why should the chasm make any sense whatsoever? How does it work? Why? What right do I have to Tzvi's house? It's not Elisha's house anymore. Those two mysteries, what's pshat in Rashi, if you unpack it, seems to say, a shtar chov is a shtar kinyan. Hayitachin. And, bechalal, we explained what shibun nechasim is, how it works, phenomenologically, how it operates, but we described it. We haven't explained it. Tzarech bir, why does shibun nechasim make any sense? We're going to work on those two tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem, and once we explore based on Ritzvan and Sivos and a Rambam, Mav Vlova, Yurches Beis, how does Shibun Achasim even work? By what mechanism do I have the halachic right to take away a house that belongs to Tzvi? If you figure that out, you may be able to pour that back into appreciating what's going on Gimel Beis. Tashakov, thank you so much. I will see almost all of you in Shir tomorrow. For those who we have dismissed to host, I'm glad to send you a link tomorrow. Give me your email. Exactly. You're welcome.